So now you are well into the BRAC process. Tell us what has happened so far and what has yet to happen.
Well, yeah, it's kind of interesting, you know, well into it. We're almost beyond it, I'd say. Our BRAC process is defined by we have three different agencies coming up here, or three different activities. First is, and the largest is the Defense Information Systems Agency. The second is a defense media activity. And the third one's a little bit different because it's not an actual single organization. It is the defense adjudications. And adjudications is kind of an interesting thing because sounds kind of like a legal thing when you say adjudications. But what it actually is when a security clearance is done, what they do is they go out and they investigate your background. But then they take all the data that has been gathered, and then they send that to a defense adjudicator. And that person determines whether you get the clearance or not. Well, there's multiple adjudication offices. You know, for instance, the Navy has one, the Air Force, the Army. But also there are different organizations, like the Joint Staff has an adjudication facility. The DIA has one, et cetera. So what they're doing is they're taking all these different adjudication facilities or organizations and combining them in one building. So that's what adjudications is. So that's our three pieces of BRAC. And to give you an idea of the scale, the building or the DIS is the largest. It's about 4,500 people roughly. And then DMA is about a little over 500. And then adjudications is about a little over 700. So that gives you a scale. DISA by far is the largest organization, and the other ones are just under 1,000, and it brings our grand total about 5,500 personnel coming in.
What are some of the biggest challenges that you've faced that maybe you didn't foresee as this move got underway?
Well, you know, it's interesting you say about challenges because, you know, a lot of it's unforeseen, and I think we've actually been very fortunate here because what I would say is we've been very tremendously lucky. The process in itself is challenged, and it's different wherever you're at because every environment's different, obviously. So when you look at BRAC, you know, it was supposed to be to combine these bases and things. More for us, the combining, you know, happened off the facility. For us, this is kind of simply the construction and relocation of organizations to our base. And we're doing this with other organizations that are not BRAC. So for us, whether it's BRAC or not BRAC, it almost doesn't matter. It's just a matter of getting these organizations moved up here. So what it comes down to is what's the challenge and how do you do that? And the key challenge, I think, is communication and organization. And it's going to depend upon what kind of organization's coming. You know, is it an Army organization? Is it a joint? In our case, it's all joint and very heavily civilian. And then that will define what goes on. So, for instance, we had some luck with ours because our military piece of this is relatively small. We've got probably in that grand total of 5,500, there's only about roughly 600 military personnel that are part of those organizations. So we didn't have a tremendous strain on barracks or community resources to support military. It's mostly a civilian transient workforce. So what that left us with is, you know, challenges as far as transportation and these organizations. How are they going to move up here and convince their workforce to move as well? And then if they're, for instance, this is the best example, a very Northern Virginia located workforce, how do you convince them to either move to Maryland or how do you help them commute from their location in Virginia, their homes in Virginia now to Fort Meade? So a lot of it's just organization and communication. And I just have to say that we were very lucky in that the fact that the organizations moving to Fort Meade have been exceptional. They have embraced us. We've embraced them. We work very closely together. They are very smart and intelligent and well-organized organizations. So they've really done everything right as far as preparing their workforce and plowing the ground to make sure their people get up here in a smooth manner.
Is it safe to say that everyone coming to Fort Meade from wherever has to drive there? And how's that gone?
Well, that's probably our biggest challenge right now as far as the future of this effort. Right now, before BRAC hit, our base population, 3 years ago or so, was around 35,000. BRAC is supposed to bring 5,500 new folks here. Well, right now today, our population is officially 41,000. So we've already grown. That's without BRAC. So we have grown. There's 6,000 right there. By the end of BRAC, by September, our population is going to be 48,000. So in the 3-year period, our population has grown. In the BRAC piece, that's going to be less than half. So we have a massive influx of personnel. And like I said, most of this influx, our military growth part of that, it's only been about 2,500 or so. So most of it is a civilian workforce trying to commute to Fort Meade. So it's putting some pressure on our transportation infrastructure, both inside and outside the installation. So what we have done is we're kind of attacking it in three different ways. The first way we're attacking that is internal transportation projects, things like road improvements, gate improvements, and intersection improvements. And it's all about, federal funding, trying to get the funds to try to improve those roads. And, I don't need to say anything about, the budget constraints. That is a challenge, and that we continue to work that. Additionally, we work very closely with the state as far as improvements to the roads outside the installation to get people to our boundary. And we've had some success there as well. And again, we're very lucky. We have great relationships with our congressional, state, and local representatives and governments to help facilitate that process. And, we're doing some road widenings and things like that. And then last, and this is, who knows, this may be the most important in the long term. We are very aggressively pursuing things like mass transit improvements. We've vastly expanded our shuttle inside the installation and exterior to the installation, and telework to try to get people to telework as well. And hopefully that'll take some of these drivers off the road. But you hit it right on those. That is our biggest challenge right now, I believe, in the outlying years. We kind of like to say that BRAC, and we're starting now to call it transformation, because we have a lot more coming to Fort Meade right now. And we're saying, hey, this isn't over. Now that people are here, we've got to continue to look at this process to ensure that this massive transformation that the installation has absorbed is taken care of.
We're talking with Colonel Daniel Thomas. He is the installation commander at Fort Meade. And I wanted to ask you about other infrastructure issues besides transportation, being the most obvious one. But if you do experience this great influx of personnel, you got to have other infrastructure issues to worry about: power grid, water, that sewer, that kind of thing.
Yes, and we have recently undergone privatization, meaning that we've turned our utilities over to private providers. So we are kind of in the last stages, if you will, of our electrical privatization, and we are moving forward with our water privatization. So,
is that unusual for the military to do that?
I think this is a military-wide effort that we're going this direction. So, I was a little bit concerned initially coming in. It was kind of the unknown that we were embarking on, but it's been pretty smooth, and so far so good. It looks like it's going well. And interestingly, the other infrastructure issues right now, water and electric has not been ones that we've had to tackle. More so, what we're experiencing is maybe some of the issues that aren't necessarily infrastructure, they're smaller infrastructure issues. For instance, housing. We're starting to have some housing issues with some, more of a larger population of senior officers here, for instance. Or, something as simple as our gym. Our gym is starting to get a lot more crowded. Again, more people, you see things like that. Or not even necessarily infrastructure, but things like staffing, where our legal personnel who handle legal issues for either soldiers or civilians, where now their workload, their caseload for instance, like claims, is growing significantly because you just happen to have more people. And these are kind of, lagging indicators. You can anticipate them somewhat, but you really don't get the feel of how extensive they're going to be, I don't think. It's hard to predict. Okay, yeah, based upon these 5,500 people, our claims load is going to go up 10%. I don't know that there's really a science behind that. It's more of, you know it when you start to feel it.
And how come you didn't make DISA build its own gym in its brand new building?
Actually, they do have a pretty good fitness facility inside there. It depends upon the organization and what kind of funding that they bring. So DISA, for instance, does have a mini fitness facility inside their installation. They also have a cafeteria inside there that's pretty nice, I understand. But on the flip side, DMA, which is a much smaller organization building, they do not have a cafeteria in there. So it really just depends upon, it's not actually common for building or organizations to come in and build a fitness center inside of a facility. It really depends upon the size of it and really the character of the organization. For instance, we're opening up another building or finishing another building, which is a brigade headquarters here on the base, which is completely unassociated with BRAC, but it's probably it's definitely along the scale of the two smaller buildings of our BRAC project. But there's no fitness facility in there because we, as a garrison, are supposed to provide those underlying service provisions.
And how is your role going to change as installation commander, working with all of these new people, creating this sense of unity? It almost seems like you would need a degree in psychology.
that would probably help with almost any garrison commander, I think, no matter where he was at. But the interesting thing about Fort Meade and perhaps the good news in that is that this has kind of been our character all along. We have well over 90 different what we call tenant organizations or partner organizations on the installation, and a lot of installations are kind of defined by a single organization or hierarchy. For instance, Fort Hood, Texas, with Third Corps, everything kind of flows under that Corps headquarters and that organization. Well, here at Fort Meade, even though NSA certainly is our largest tenant or partner organization, they really are not necessarily over 90 aren't connected. For instance, I have a very large organization called DINFOS, Defense Information School, and they have absolutely no association with our intelligence organizations, and it's certainly not with NSA. It's an organization completely on their own. I also have something called Asymmetric Warfare Group, another organization, brigade-sized organization that has absolutely no affiliation with intelligence and no affiliation with NSA. So we have a lot of organizations that are completely independent. So really what we've done is we've just expanded the character of the installation as it already exists, and that is 90 tenant or 90 partners that pretty much are very independent, and as the garrison, we've kind of got to bring them under one umbrella. And even though it sounds maybe daunting, in a way it's refreshing, because I just have to say, maybe it's lucky, but the professionals that run these organizations, it's actually been a pleasure working with them. So it's not as hard as it seems to bring them together and reasonably discuss issues and come with common solutions for everybody. It's actually been a pleasure.
Great stuff. Is there anything else about this you'd like to add?
I'd only say that, for our base in particular, and again, I think if you look at BRAC across the board, it's different wherever you go. With ours, we're now embarking upon a new phase that has nothing to do with BRAC, and that's cyber. And cyber wasn't even on the radar screen when I came into command almost 3 years ago. And now it's a huge issue. We stood up Cyber Command, and we have, you know, Marine Corps cyber, 10th Fleet, Navy Fleet cyber, Air Force cyber, smaller element, and they stood up U.S. Army Cyber Command, 3-star, which is going to be moving up here as well. And all these cyber commands and building this giant cyber infrastructure on the installation that really is going to out, it's going to be bigger than our BRAC construction and our BRAC load in the end. So it's interesting because the same process that now you can say, well, BRAC's pretty much done, we're really just transforming the face of the installation, and now it's entering a different phase that's not BRAC, but it will be very similar and tremendously changing our installation.